Hello, Mustang fans, and welcome to another Ford Performance Edition of the Mustang Owners Podcast. I'm John Clore, Enthusiast Communications Manager for Ford Performance, along with my co-host Mike Ray, President of the Mustang Owners Club of Southeastern Michigan and the International Council of Mustang Clubs. And we've got another special episode for you tonight to discuss. Are you ready? One of our favorite people from the Mustang world who made such a huge contribution, not only to Ford, but to also the enthusiast community. Mike, you actually got us John Savona, the former Ford VP of America's Manufacturing Labor Affairs, who once headed up Mustang production at the Flat Rock Assembly Plant. What did you do to get him?
Isn't it awesome? We have one of our true Mustang heroes with us here tonight.
Absolutely. So, John Savona, welcome to the Mustang Owners Podcast.
It's my pleasure to be here, John and Mike. And, you know, it's been a while, but I feel like I never left you guys just listening to your podcast. You've had some amazing people that have had such a positive influence on the Mustang, many of which I worked with.
I'm sure that brought back a lot of memories for you too, John.
For sure. Listening to the voices and the stories, as you always say, there's many, many stories around Mustangs and people that own them.
So you want to tell the listeners tonight what Mike Ray did to bribe you to come on? I mean, you had a storied retirement, and I don't know if you saw us out in the parking lot trying to get in. They said that the place was full. We couldn't come. And then they said, no, your wife was saying we can't bring you gifts. So we just had to wait till you retired. And no, what did he do? I mean, just said, I want to go talk Mustangs, and he wanted to do that.
Well, all he had to do was text, and then we talked on the phone, and it didn't take much because Mike has made such a big difference in the Mustang community, and you know I love Mustang, and so it was really an easy sell.
Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah, Mike, thank you, because folks, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but you know, there's a lot of people involved in the manufacturing of cars all over Ford Motor Company, and plant managers come in and they go out, and it's hard to keep track of all that. But every once in a while, especially when it comes to Mustang, if you get the right person in charge of that factory, not only do you build great product, but you get a connection, if you will. Because everybody and their brother listening tonight, if there's one thing they'd like to do, that is to go see Mustangs getting built. Nothing against Mike, the F-150 tour. That's wonderful. But everyone in the world wants to get into Flat Rock and watch the cars getting made. And let's face it, not an easy thing to do. There's the UAW, and there's working rules, and there's cars being put on prototype basis, all kinds of things to juggle. Manufacturing schedules, and yet when somehow Mike, you got in touch with John Savona when he was running Flat Rock, that changed. We got access, we got to meet people, and we got enthusiasts into the plant. It hasn't been the same since.
That literally, to me, that path changed my whole career, changed the Mustang world. It was something that the doors weren't open, and it's very hard to even do it now. And if it is now, it is on such a minimum entrance, like you can't have more than a couple dozen people. And back then, our tours, we were just, I mean, there was hundreds of people. We broke them into small groups, obviously, but we had hundreds of people there for tours. And yeah, that was all thanks to Mr. Savona and the great guys at FRAP with Ralph Arning and Gary Stewart. They helped so much with doing all that, and it was just so organized, very well planned, very well executed, and memories that were made that will last a lifetime for all those enthusiasts that actually got to do that.
Yeah, John, did you have any idea at the time when Mike was breaking down your door, please let us come look at Mustangs get built, the effect that you would have for years on the people that went through that plant? Have you ever started to think about all those people that can't get Flat Rock out of their minds?
Yeah, I guess I really never thought about it like that, John. But I knew, you know, Mike, I knew the importance of the Mustang clubs, and I knew we had clubs all over the world in many places where we don't even sell Mustangs. So I knew the importance of making sure our Mustang customers had a connection to the factories where we build it. And so it just made a lot of sense. And, you know, we did a lot of fun stuff around the Woodward Dream Cruise, and it wasn't that difficult to pull off. It takes planning, and as you know, Mike's a planner, and we just got it done.
Well, you sure did. I got to tell you set a bad precedent because the people that came after you, they're worried about things like their deliverables and building the cars, and you somehow juggled. John, you not only did that, you got promoted so fast. And I remember, Mike, when you called me and said, "Oh, Savona's going to be head of North American manufacturing." I go, "That's awesome for him, but bad for us."
No, that was great. It seemed like every other time I was, turning on the TV or the news, I'd see him on the news or, in the Ford role with our things. John got promoted to this or John got promoted to that. And so very well deserved because it's hard to find people like John and me when we were speaking before the podcast. Like I said, it was to me, I guarantee it was not uncommon for him to put 100-hour weeks in all day long, doing all the jobs and responsibilities that he had at Ford Motor Company.
Yeah, John, those had to be some tough days, taking over that factory, especially with a product as visible as Mustang.
Well, yeah, for sure. And well, when you move up in the company, and it was certainly a blessing, it takes you farther away from all the fun stuff that I got to do with you guys, on a more regular basis. And then you can't put that many miles on your Mustang. That's the other problem when you're working hours.
Yeah, too many hours. So,
Yeah.
John, you actually, I mean, I got brought into the Ford world after I left AutoWeek, and I was talking to you earlier about, going to the Dearborn Assembly and seeing those old wooden floors with nuts and bolts from Model Ts pressed into them, and seeing Mustangs built there. And I know you cut your teeth there at over at DAP.
I sure did. After spending 10 years at Wayne, my first 10 years at Wayne Assembly, I went over to Dearborn Assembly. That was in 1999, and we were building the Mustang there at the time. Very, very old facility. It was really exciting for me. My first car, when I came out of the Army after high school, was a 1989 5-liter GT,
Wow.
blue with kind of silver on the bottom and an orange pinstripe around the vehicle. And so to be in the Mustang plant and see Mustangs every day, and then get to drive Mustangs home every day. Our kids were pretty young, and so it was just a what a treat. It was a difficult facility because it was so old, but
Yeah.
just a treat to work there. And there were days where Bill Ford would sneak out of headquarters and try to elude his security and just show up on the end of the line at the Mustang plant because, as you know, he's a true enthusiast and just absolutely loves the Mustang.
Well, that had to be a challenge for you, especially with there was long talk of Dearborn Assembly, the tools were worn out, the place was worn out, logistics going up and down between the floors and the paint. I mean, for Ford to do a world-class product, it got tougher and tougher every year. So were you looking with any anticipation to that vehicle's move over to what back then was a Mazda plant out in Flat Rock, Michigan?
Yeah, and I had moved on to other locations, after I left Dearborn Assembly and before we moved the Mustang to Flat Rock. But then, I was reunited with the Mustang when I got to Auto Alliance as the plant manager and then the president of the joint venture. But so I didn't see the actual move, but it was definitely needed. It's a more modern facility there in Flat Rock, and we got more had more room to grow volume and certainly build a higher quality product.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, Mike, you were telling me that we talk about a lot of people that are in the positions of affecting Mustang product, but it's the enthusiasts, I think, Mike, that seem to be able to make that car even a little bit more important. When you got a guy like John, who's a Mustang fan, he's not just building another product. He's building a car that he buys, drives, and enjoys, and talks to people with one. So there's a little extra care that goes into running a factory that makes our favorite car.
Any job is, if you got passion behind it, that's for sure. And John, correct me if I'm wrong, and let me know if you were, I'm assuming, big part of this, of the planning. So back in 2009, our board of directors of our Mustang Club got invited to Flat Rock to get a sneak peek of the new 2010 restyle coming out. And we were there. And John, you know the infamous story of me meeting Mr. Parasek that day. But John, do you remember that? Jamal Hamidi was there. The Shelby was being introduced to us. But before anybody else seen it out there, we were privileged to see it, you know, before the release. So were you part of that or part of that planning?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Jamal being the chief engineer, I think he was chief engineer of the Shelby program at the time. And
yeah,
of course, Dave, and I've worked with Dave in so many capacities. You know, we could do a whole podcast on Dave stories. And, you know, prior to Dave, when I was at Dearborn Assembly, I was an area manager and Hao Tai Tang was the chief engineer.
Wow.
Yep. So, you know, I had some pretty incredible chief engineers to partner with on this great product.
Yeah, Art Hyde, great boy. Was it Art before Hout, John?
Yeah,
Art Hyde, yep.
And S197, heck yeah.
But so, John, do you know the story of how I met Dave? Who was on that day?
Yeah, it was. Is that when you called his tail lamps ugly? Or
yeah, it was. Yes, again.
Wait a minute. He didn't call them ugly. He merely said.
That is so great. Yes.
I mean, when you say you don't like him, you know, John, it's just a nice way of calling the baby ugly.
Well, wait a minute. You guys, for any of those of you whose mom sets you up on a blind date and you say, Mom, how does she look? And your mom said, well, she's got a great personality.
Yeah, what a great day. But, you know, literally look back at it now, right, in hindsight, that day changed my life forever.
Yeah, yeah.
And it sure did.
And John, you're so right. We've had Dave on before, but we like you. There's so many stories we want to share. This won't be your last time on the podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
No, but the questions that everybody has, and especially when it came to Mustang, I mean, S197, right now SN95 is the entry level for a lot of collectors, young kids who can afford a Mustang. And you know, there's entire catalogs of parts made for those cars. But that really changed when you guys moved over from AAI and into Flat Rock and building the S197. That car, because of its hauntingly close relationship style-wise to Gail Halterman's original Mustang, really rekindled Mustang. And you guys were building quite a few Mustangs out of there back then, if I recall, for the launch of that the 2005 car.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, the plan allows us to do a lot more variants coming off the current platform, and you know, that was the other thing that it really enabled. And I think you've had Steve Ling on as well, and you know, he was instrumental along with others and Jim Owens and Dave to really keep the product fresh and you know, keep variants coming. And I think that's really key. And certainly Flat Rock has the flexibility to do that.
Well, Mike, we were blessed to be able to get so many, have a plant manager that understood that. And even though, John, we know you were under so many constraints and there's so much pressure put on Mustang being the, you know, say what you will, F-Series is the flagship of Ford, but Mustang is certainly the icon of Ford. And for you to be running that, and, you know, like I said, when you moved up to North American manufacturing and then, you know, onto all the global manufacturing, it was all great for you, but we missed the heck out of you. And we just wanted you to know that when it came to letting us in, I don't think any listener out there tonight would turn down an opportunity to come walk through Flat Rock. You don't have any influence now of calling the folks that are running there now and say, hey, it's a good idea to let Mike Ray and bring his friends in.
Well, I'm not going to admit that I have influence, but I still know a few people.
I bet you do.
Yeah.
All right, Mike.
That means any plant around the world.
Yeah, and we had, during my time as plant manager there, we had President Biden come in, and we had a lot of, we had big groups, and, you know, Mike, we did the Mustang clubs, and
Yep.
And then I'd have, you know, friends call me up, and one of my friends, Sean Griffin, who played football at Michigan and then played in the NFL, he brought a friend of his, Lamar Woodley, who played at Michigan and then played for the Steelers. Yep. And I'm from Pittsburgh originally. So that was one of my favorite visits, because he's a big guy. And we had a GT350 in the lobby of the plant there. And he asked me, we were going to give him a plant tour. And he asked me if he can sit in the vehicle. And I said, yeah, absolutely. And so he's sitting in there and he was just in awe. And I said, well, start it up. And he started it up and he revved it. And it, you know, as you can imagine, in that small lobby with that, you know, exhaust, yeah. Note, he revved it and it blew out two of the fluorescent bulbs above the car.
No.
And all the glass came crashing down. And I mean, the look on his face was priceless. And me and the other guy are laughing, and he's apologizing. And I said, oh no, this is perfect. Like, this is going to make for a good story.
Yeah, you'll never forget that ever.
No. Fantastic. That's what Mustang's all about.
Absolutely, so it is.
It had to be kind of exciting to hear, you know, that we're exporting it to all those markets, because you dealt with plants all over the world. You had to do quite a bit of travel once you got to do the global overseeing manufacturing. Did you have anything to do with in forays into China or some of the new factories that we moved? Did you ever go to Australia and places like that?
I've been all over the world. Haven't been to Australia, but been all over Asia and Europe and South America. You know, the decision to bring Mustang across the globe was very exciting. When I was in the Army, I was stationed in Germany, and my first, my first real introduction to a Mustang was one of my Army friends bought a Mustang GT and brought it over to Germany.
Wow.
And so it really amazed me how much people loved Mustang in a country like Germany, where we had never officially sold it. So, you know, when we did the things we needed to do to the vehicle, and we put an independent rear suspension in it, and we knew the European and the China customers have, you know, different things on the vehicle that they look at.
Yep.
We knew that we had to make sure that our standards were going to be acceptable for the globe. And I certainly had had a lot to do with making sure we delivered the right standards and quality.
Oh, you sure did. John, one of the other questions that people had about, especially guys who run the factories and the plants, we know you've had to have, because you're manufacturing these cars, a really great relationship with a lot of the engineering teams, the chief engineers. And I mean, because as you build a car, you learn things, and the factory learns, and just to make better vehicles. But did you guys have that kind of a relationship, or any kind of relationship, with the design side of Ford, the designers, the guys that, I mean, were they coming to the factory? Were they, do you have any engagement with them other than going to Mike Ray's big party?
Well, certainly our relationship with engineering was crucial. And we talked about Dave earlier, and you know, Dave was and always has been a good steward for the Mustang, you know, really making sure that we deliver a vehicle that's going to respect, you know, the name and the history and all of that. And that's how we operated every day. And so when we had issues, I'm the manufacturing guy and Dave's the product development, product engineering guy. He would be right out in the yard or at the end of the line with me working through the problems. As far as the design goes, you know, our biggest role is to make sure that the vehicle is buildable. You know, if we're going to do something, we have to be able to put it together, you know, put it together at high volume. And so, you know, I think our guys at the plant, you talked to Gary Stewart at one point, and then Tony Alakim. I remember when we were going to do the Cobra Jet, Tony was like attaching sheet metal and cardboard to the back end so that we would blow it out to see if it would fit through our body lines in our paint shop. And so they used to do that all the time just to say, well, is it even feasible that we can, you know, blow out the rear quarters and actually build this thing at Flat Rock? And so we had a lot of that involvement and really far up front.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Okay. You're a rock star there, because I remember, Mike, I don't know if you recall when we did the Faster Horse, one of the comments that Gale Halderman, the designer of the original Mustang, said, "Oh, designing a Mustang is as easy as pie. The hard part is designing a Mustang that you can actually build."
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure another person was probably involved with all that too, John, was Tom Barnes, right?
Oh yeah. Tom was always the chassis guy, but he was much more than that, as you guys know.
Oh yeah.
He was just a phenomenal individual to work with, and you know, he just you can never get him too excited, which was a really good trait to have in a job like that.
Unlike
yeah, he
John
had a lot of other duties as assigned.
Yeah. So the rumor is, Mr. Savona, that you were able to grab a set of keys and go out on that little test track behind the flat rack assembly plant and drive a couple of cars every once in a while.
Yes, and we won't say what the speed limit is on the track, because we've broken it many times. And actually, one of our last visits with Carroll Shelby before he passed, he was so gracious. He would sign so many things for us, and we would use it for auctions and use it to recognize people in the plan. And but we had Dave and I had him out on that track, and let's just say that, you know, Dave had me a little worried with the speed that we were going with Mr. Shelby in the vehicle. And then we got back into the one of the stripe rooms, and one of our employees asked Carroll to sign a hood that we had up on the wall. And the only way Carroll was going to get to it is we were going to have him go up a ladder, which we did.
Oh God.
and I just told my team, I'm holding the ladder, because if Carroll falls on my watch, you know, I'm catching him.
Well, I remember that I was there on the SVT team when, of course, our 2006 SVT Mustang Cobra became the 2007 Shelby GT500. And I remember Parasak and Carroll coming off that track back there, and you had your whole team out there. And I said, "How did it go?" to Dave, and Parasak said, "You know, Carroll can't see a damn thing." He can't
That's
see.
Great.
I go, "You let him drive and he can't see?" He goes, it's kind of like, well, he's I figured, well, he's at the Flat Rock track, so he's on private property at least.
Right. Right.
But no,
Hey,
John,
John, you know, here's another thing from Flat Rock is how about them Cobra Jet delivery days?
Oh God.
Oh my gosh. The Cobra Jet. Yeah, I remember Bob Tasca. It would
yep.
have been Bob Tasca the third.
Junior.
And he had three of them, and they you know, him and others would just pick these cars up. But I remember the first time Gary Stewart started up one of these Cobra Jets, and we were in one of the launch buildings. And he should have known better, because you cannot start this thing up inside and have any hearing left when you're done. It was the most incredible program I've ever done.
Well, Mike, remember you and I have been talking about this for many, many years before we had a Mustang Owners Museum. And I remember, John, that there are people who, after we acquired AAI and it became a Ford property, who thought that this would be, we had some outbuildings there, I guess maybe the old, one of the off buildings where you do striping. This would be a good place where I know maybe Dave Parasak thought where we could do a Mustang museum. And, but what happened, I heard, was there, we quickly had to pass that up when we started building EVs and Lincolns, excuse me, other cars out there. And we just ran out of real estate. Were you involved in any of those talks to put some kind of a Mustang museum or facility there on the Flat Rock property?
Yeah, myself and a few of the other guys at the plant at the time had actually approached Dave about the idea, because, you know, we thought if we don't have Dave on board, it's probably, you know, dead in the water. But we thought and I had worked in Kentucky, and so, you know, I'm very familiar with the Corvette Museum down there, and I knew the plant manager when I was down there running one of the Ford plants. And I just thought, well, why don't we have a Mustang museum? I mean, we have, you know, the Henry Ford, and but we need a Mustang museum. And, you know, to have, of course, you know, you guys, I know we unfortunately had to celebrate the life of Steve Hall recently, but, you know, the Mustang Owners Museum and the labor of love that was for him and a few others was just incredible. And I'm glad somebody finally got it done.
Well, absolutely. And that's we're just honored to be able to carry on his vision but with this Mustang Owners podcast. And you're so right, John. I mean, your work with this car, and I mean, you worked with a lot of vehicles, a lot of popular Ford vehicles, all the SUVs, the trucks, and but I mean, the one vehicle that you keep coming back to down memory lane has got to be Mustang. Do you still get a chance to drive a Mustang or hang out a little bit with some Mustang people?
I do. Well, now that I'm retired, I have time to do some cars and coffee. Always wanted to do that. But I have one of the 2015 GT350Rs.
Ooh, very nice.
I've got number 28 of 37. It's deep impact blue. It's got the white over the top stripes with the red pinstripe. And so wow. I'll take that to some of the local shows. And I've had it on a track twice. I had it at M1 and that was a treat. My first time on a track, but looked at my rearview mirror and there was the yellow vet behind me. Didn't take the hairpin turn the way I did and left the track.
nice.
Yeah. And then the second time I had it out on a track was in Gingerman, on Gingerman in South Haven. And actually Mark Wilson, I had no experience really, you know, doing serious racing, but Mark got the car with me. And every time we did heats, you know, he was telling me, really giving me confidence in the capability of the car. And we were doing our last run. And the only way you can pass is, you know, the on the straightaways, you get a hand out the window. And the guy in front of me, I had been riding him pretty hard. And he was in a Viper. And there was no more joy than that arm coming out that window and hitting it to go around that Viper.
You know, John, we do an event in Gingerman every year, the beginning of the week of Woodward Week. And I would love for you to come join us this year because, you know, Art Hyde's out there every year. Mike Berardi's out there every year. They got their cars out there having a ton of fun. You would know so many people out there and have a blast with us. I'd love to have you out there with us.
Yeah, let me know if I'm around and available. I'd love to do it. Yeah, I did the Mohawk Racing one, and so
that's it.
Yeah, the Mohawk, so all Ford Performance it. Guys. Yeah, yep. That was so I did it last year, and I rode in a car with you know Bill DeCost, and there were some and I can't remember if Art was. I've seen Art at the Woodward Dream Cruise on and off, but yeah, Mike Berardi was out there. A lot of Ford and other guys. It was
I was there, so that me and John both were there. So I'm surprised we didn't see you. But
well, you didn't come on the Ford day. I had to come on Club day, and I got to tell you, John, Art Hyde still drives that Frankenstein green.
He does
half Cobra, half GT, whatever that. He still tracks that thing. And you guys, I mean, what? How cool is that? Years and years after you've made those Mustangs, that you come back and enjoy them with the people that you built them for. I got to hand it to you. That's a real enthusiast. You didn't just talk the talk. You walked the walk.
Absolutely.
Oh, bless your soul, Mike. We could talk to Johnny for hours. We got to have him back. We got to do, there's so many more Parasac stories that we could get into.
So I was just texting Dave as we were actually recording this tonight. And he said, John, he goes, please tell John I love him.
That's so great. Yeah,
Dave definitely loves and respects you a ton.
Awesome.
Yeah, and the fans out there do too, John. And so I know everybody that was able to walk through Flat Rock because of you and all the cars that you helped build through that factory that people are now enjoying every day because of the passion you had for it. On behalf of the entire Mustang community and all Mike Ray's pestering, we have to thank you for joining us tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure, guys. And again, I can't thank you enough for what you do for this brand and for this car. Very, very few of anything make it this long and just stay true to what it is. And it's just pure joy. When you get behind the wheel of a Mustang, as you guys know, you just forget about everything else that's going on and it just makes your day, no matter what kind you have.
Well, thank you, John. And you've made our day. And thanks for appearing on our beautiful podcast. And well, folks, that's a wrap for this edition of the Mustang Owners Podcast. But don't forget to check out the enthusiast section of FordPerformance.com this week because everyone has a Mustang story, even John Savona. And if you don't already have done so, get your Mustang Club or Facebook group registered on FordPerformanceClubConnect.com and all of your Mustangs registered on FordSpecialVehicleRegistry.com. You can also find out what Mike's Mega Club is up to by visiting moxum.com. And as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions that you email to us at clubhub@ford.com. So until next time, we'll be looking to catch you down the road.